Okay, thank you. Let us now move on to our next agenda item, which is the report back from the agenda consultation breakouts. And I've got to find my document here. So effectively what we're going to do is go through each of the questions that we had in front of us and each group just to report back, and we have some slides which are in the order, if I can open the damn things here, of technology doesn't work for me, of what those questions were. So, and Jake, Rene, Ernesto and Daniel are the four leaders of the groups. So the first question that the groups considered was, what factors should the ISB consider in deciding how much of its resources should be allocated to each of its five main areas of technical projects? And if we go to, I think it's slide four then, or five, or six, or seven, or something. Yes. Yeah. So, Jake, do you want to comment on your group in relation to that first question?
Yes, thank you, Joanna. This was the one question where I think I managed to keep the group vaguely on topic. So hopefully this was this is useful feedback. So, I sort of split this into to two main areas. We felt there were some general factors that always needed to be borne in mind, and those were things like, well, there really is probably no perfect answer to how you allocate your resources across the various different groups, but whatever decision that you take about where you put your resources, that decision needs to be transparent. Why have you chosen to put resources behind various different projects and various different groupings? There's also probably a minimum level of investment needed in just looking at the strategic framework and looking at how do we maintain long-term relevance. So irrespective of what's on the agenda right now, taking a more longer-term look at things and thinking where is the world going? And on that topic, making sure that any projects that are there are then aligned to those long-term strategic goals of the ISB. So those were sort of general factors that we felt should always influence the allocation of resource. Moving on to the next slide were some specific factors, and I would describe what was coming back as trying to make an assessment on return on investment. So looking at how much investment is going to be required and what's the possible benefit coming off the back of doing any particular project, and things that might factor into that assessment might be, well, how many issues is the project going to solve? So if you've got a cross-cutting project, perhaps on liabilities generally, that might solve a number of problems, whereas a more rifle shot approach to a particular topic and a particular issue within a particular standard may only affect a few. Trying to think about, well, we should be thinking about the future as well as backward looking. So we have some problems with financial reporting now, but how relevant will those problems be in the future? And actually, are there possible problems coming up that are going to affect the relevance of IFRS? That's a difficult thing to do, but certainly something that we felt should be on the ISB's mind when they were thinking about allocation of resources. Thinking again about the types of people affected. Is it the communicators, by which we meant the preparers, but picking up on the comment yesterday about they don't like to be called preparers. I don't think we had a better name for users, so I still use the term users. But we do need to think about how different stakeholders are affected, and also think about which of those stakeholders we might care more about. Also, things to factor into account is what industry is affected, what markets are affected, and also how prevalent is the issue. So maybe an assessment by reference to the market capitalization of the entities affected may give you a view on actually what is the possible benefit. So going back to that investment versus benefit equation in the first line there. And also one thing we think the ISB need to bear in mind now is there's some very large standards coming out, clearly revenue leasing, IFRS 9, insurance, and we anticipate that there's going to be more need for maintenance and implementation type support in the early stages of those standards.
Thank you, Jake. I'm going to go through all of these for the first question, then ask Hugh and April to, if they've got any specific comments or questions, and then open up for on those. So, Rene, would you like to go through yours?
Okay, you can see it's a little bit more cryptic, but it's very difficult to capture everything that people mention. The one thing I would say is that, in coming up with a list of issues or suggestions, I don't think we are in any way raising pearls of wisdom or issues that we believe the ISB is not doing. You know, so we're not going to write down anything now or today that, in my opinion, is new, or that we believe that they're not doing it. So, the things that we have captured is the time standard will require, that it gets duly considered, the importance to investors. You know, you have to look at economic situations and crisis situations to which you have to respond. You have to consider whether it's fundamental or minor that you want to do. The issue of convergence, obviously, it is important because the IFRS isn't accounting standard everywhere, and with FASB it does play an important part. So those are considerations that will come in. Jens, I actually have to ask you to speak on your interdependence. I didn't capture yours quite succinctly. And a thought that you had on that, but if you want to, you can elaborate on that. But I think to sum up, I don't think, as I said, we're going to come up with pearls of wisdom today, and nor do we think that none of this is, in fact, what is considered.
I think that in itself is a good indication of, if you like, feedback to the ISB, but we'll get Hugh and April to comment on that in a minute. Ernesto.
Yes, thanks. Also, our group looked into the allocation process from a strategic point of view. I mean, the discussion was that it should have a longer vision, as Jake was saying, something like a 20-year vision when looking at the general terms of reference to allocating resources. And here the reference was to relevance, consistent application, and completing the literature. Also, one point was raised as maybe becoming part of this more of a discussion of allocating resources for the long run is to have resources to take care of fatal flaw and due process to protect the brand. Then getting more into the current agenda, a lot of respondents and participants thought that resources regarding maintenance and application would be key, given the fact that some majors, very relevant standards are coming to the market now after a lot of discussion. And also from a user's perspective and in general, the disclosure initiative seems to be key and resources should be allocated there. And finally, also in terms of investors, I mean, there was indication that the outreach now for the agenda is very important to keep this good momentum and get some ideas there.
Thank you. And finally, Daniel.
Yes, we started with background thoughts, and the basic question was, are you able to identify what capacity you have in order to cope with all the areas? And we questioned the research methodology to use in order to recognize the fact that how long time initial research takes in order to be able to start on the right foot. And then we flip on what we call the major assessment tool. It's the comparison about the impact and the level of efforts that we need to do. Of course, quick wins are when we are having very low effort to do and having a high impact, but that doesn't happen very often. So what we realize that is we need to concentrate where we might have a high impact, and where there is low impact, we should not devote too many effort on that. And we need to realize that research needs time before we can be in a position to make that assessment in terms of the level of effort and the impact. We also pointed out the fact that major projects such as leases, insurance, and revenue standard have a very high impact and relatively low incremental effort, so should be top priority in terms of where we should allocate it, our resources. And then we ask us the most important question: are we delivering what investors need? And that question should be at upfront of our needs. Are we waiting, of course, at the research stage? Because if we are not able to define exactly that we are having a problem and being able to propose some key solution, then why to continue? We need also to consider industries and regions, because problem might be perceived as a high, having a high impact in some region, but very, very low in the other ones. And those factors should be taken into account again. And we should have appropriate focus on implementation maintenance to create consistency. Because as we mentioned, we are having a major initiative that we will issue standards in the near future. But if we are not good in implementing it, then we will face inconsistency. Inconsistency leads to hurting the brand. And that's why we said that we should not underestimate the time and effort to support the implementation, per se. Also, you should consider the reputation risk impact of the work that you're doing. We still continue to think about the importance of keeping convergence, aim to create additional convergence where possible, and continue to leverage groups and countries. Right now we are asking groups and countries to contribute to the workload, so I think we should emphasize on that and take advantage of it.
Thank you, Daniel. Now I'm going to put, to start with, Hugh and April on the spot to say, having heard that feedback, first of all, have you got any questions? So to clarify the feedback that has come through, or any comments around any of those before I then open it up to the rest of the team to ask for any other comments.
I'll just say a few quick things. So thank you for that. I think it's probably fair to say what René said. I don't think there are any major revolutionary new ideas there. Yeah. So that's a good thing. I think, and one thing I said this morning, I think it will be important that we tell some kind of story when we do the feedback statement. We have, I don't know, some kind of theme or something to link it all together, because otherwise it becomes, you know, almost random. You might say what we do. The other point I was going to make just before we perhaps open it up is, and we went through this kind of little journey in this forum, because actually when we set out our workload and try to forecast it over the next several years, you can see already that with the big projects we've got, we know with the amount of kind of wriggle room, or whatever you want to call it, is not as great as is suggested by this question. You know, we are going to finish these major projects and they will absorb a lot of time. And I think there are some consistent messages around the continuing importance of the disclosure initiative and the need for us to elevate performance reporting, which we call now primary financial statements, as an important project. So I suspect that in reality we'll have to see what the feedback says, but it may be easier to tell that story than we anticipate from this kind of very open question.
So If I suggest that how Hugh has summed that up to say from the feedback from all four groups that there is nothing revolutionary there about what is currently being done to what any thoughts that have come through. Yes, there are some thinking, but the key that Hugh is saying is that within the feedback statement really need to say what how the criteria and priorities have been done, and that probably actually there's not much flexibility or legroom anyway. So if I take those, I think, as the three things that come out from this, together with the detail that has come through from those four groups, open it up for discussion. Does anyone disagree, arguably, that those are the three key things that have come out of this? I mean, does anyone think that we have come up with anything revolutionary, or that there is anything majorly wrong with what is being done now? Françoise.
I'm not disagreeing. I've been struck that in the various summaries, the effort to support implementation, so in a way to contribute to consistent application ahead of implementation is a strong message. And I'm not sure that there is at present clarity on how this should be done.
So you're talking about the implementation side?
Support to implementation.
Okay, which I think is what we're going to come to that question next. I think, yeah. Patrick, go.
I just want to put on the table an idea that I challenged my group with, and I actually put this idea in an article I wrote, I guess, a couple weeks ago. Back to
which I referred to when you weren't here.
Yeah.
I said it was wonderful, and I quoted it.
Okay. And the question, you know, to quote a fellow countryman of mine, was, do we have a process that captures the unknown unknowns? And that's the issue, I think, that's on the table. So we have a conventional process of setting accounting standards today. It's been more or less the same process that we have been following now for, I don't know, 14 years. So the question is that the way we should set accounting standards in the future? Is it quick enough to market? Is it meeting investor needs? And I question that myself as a former investor. When I look at the time to develop, for example, an impairment model, in fighting all the political battles, obviously, in that process, would it have been more expedient to develop a disclosure package first and then fight the battle around recognition and measurement? And the same is true in a half a dozen other areas, too. So I think, Gavin, you also identified this as an issue, I think, that we need to think about. But in my mind, if we continue to operate the way we have in the past, I think we will quickly become dinosaurs.
And, yeah, you weren't here at the very beginning of the session yesterday morning, and nor were you, but I quoted that and said, to me, that is the challenge that we have, is actually, is it the right process? Is it completely different environment that we're in?
I was traveling by horse and buggy to the meeting, and that's why. It's also known as the London Tube.
I was going to say, through fog-ridden London, back in the 18th century. Okay, James.
I think each one of the groups pointed out the importance to investors, as did Patrick. But we're also looking at, I think, something that will be discussed a lot more coming up, and that's the materiality initiative. And I think basically the current commenters, who are in fact investors, do not feel it's investor-friendly. And it's a thought of it, it's an intent to water down already inadequate disclosures. And it's been coordinated in part with the FASB, and on the American side, there's the same concern. So how do we pair the fact that we have all this concern for investors, but an example in the, the materiality project comes up with something that investors do not appear to like and do not think it's in their best interest at all.
Hugh, do you want to make any response to that, or we'll just take that on? We'll come to that as we go through the next couple of questions. We'll come back to that. Jake.
I think the question you asked was there anything revolutionary on those slides? I don't think there was anything revolutionary as such, although Patrick's point appears on a slide later in the deck, so thank you for preempting that one. My understanding is the research program at the moment is backward-looking and says, what are the problems in financial reporting today? And doesn't necessarily look forward and say, what do we anticipate the financial reporting problems might be in the future? So I think that would just be my challenge. It's not so much around the model of how do we set standards, but it's more around actually can we start to predict what's happening in the economy and how that might influence financial reporting.
So effectively making sure that we've got that environmental scan as part of what we're doing. Okay, I'm now going to move on to question two, which was about the implementation support effectively. And Jake, start off with you. I was thinking about juggling them around, but it's too hard to get the slides to work. So Jake, you're off.
I should probably first explain the picture. This is not a comment on the ISB or the RFRS Foundation. This is a comment on my ability to chair and get the people moving in the right direction. So, ask the question about is it the right mix of implementation support, to which the first contentious issue that came back was, what about the taxonomy? And there were some fairly fundamental questions there around who's asking for the taxonomy, who's using it, and what is the investment that the ISB are putting into that, and how does that weigh up against the benefit for users, regulators, etc. Is that a good use of the ISB's finances, was a question that was raised. Moving slightly more on topic, there was a feeling that perhaps more focus needed to be given to implementation before issue of standards. So this was an idea raised by one of our group, the purpose being to try and ensure greater consistency of implementation before the standard is actually issued. We didn't have any particular answers here, or we didn't have any silver bullets, but some things that occurred to the group were more field testing, perhaps actually having a TRG debate issues before the issue of the standard to identify possible implementation problems, an explicit recognition of the impact that new standards would have on infrastructure, and by which I mean the infrastructure of businesses, so what systems changes are needed to make a standard operational. And we felt that should probably be part of the investment versus benefit analysis, and also analysing whether we are actually obtaining responses from the right people. If you could go forward one slide, please. And really, when we're assessing the mix, what we should be doing here is applying a similar return on investment model to the one I talked about when I was talking about the specific factors in answer to question one. So assessing where to put our resources comes down to where are we going to get the biggest bang for our buck. There was also a question raised about we're expecting a number of new standards, leasing, revenue, financial instruments, etc. And there was a question about whether those upcoming standards should actually drive the ISB in their thinking around who are the right people to have on various different groups. For example, who are the right people to have on the IFRS Interpretations Committee if people are going to be trying to apply those standards. And one final thing we talked about was translation. And it was identified that actually the quality of the translation of the standards is leading to diversity in practice. So the translation is not always of the highest quality, as a result of which there are misunderstandings, we believe, of what the standards are saying. And that's exacerbated by the fact that the framework isn't translated, the basis of conclusions isn't always translated, sometimes implementation guidance isn't translated. And quite often it's only the red book that's translated, which again is believed to be problematic. So as a possible action we put up there, that the ISB should actually consider whether they are the right person to maintain responsibility for the actual translations, or whether where they want to move to is to provide some form of oversight or quality monitoring of other people who might be better placed to do the translation process itself.
Okay, thank you, Jake. René?
Okay, I think you will see that the point made by Jake in terms of education before implementation. Francois, you mentioned that, so that seems to be a common thread. It was also felt that perhaps one should look at targeted education, i.e. specific groups, although some argued against that because they felt that others could also benefit from seeing how the other side views it. So, and the other issue in terms of response by the interpretation committee, that it should be timely, although that was debated, whether you should sacrifice quality for time. So obviously it will require balance, a balanced consideration, but time is of essence. And I think one view was that one must also consider the downstream implications up front. I think that's more or less, and with what Jake has said, I think we've captured most there.
Okay, Anister?
Okay, in our group, rather than answering the question directly, I mean, I didn't manage to get that exactly, but there was a very good debate regarding how to avoid implementation in some sense, right? So basically, I mean, the recommendation was to do more upfront analysis and avoid more maintenance and discussion afterwards. One of the things that was raised was that sometimes there's conflict between standards, and that is affecting post-implementation and should be addressed beforehand. In terms of the debate I was mentioning, there was a lot of discussion regarding consistency. I mean, if we are on a principle-based standard, I mean, it should be something that could be addressed with disclosure principle-based, and consistency probably should be something about consistency in quality rather than doing exactly the same thing. So this was the kind of a debate that we were having, and as I said, the main summary is that getting more upfront analysis would sort out most of the really conflicting issues, like cutting into different standards. Also, I mean, there was a mention to the role of the IFRIC. I mean, if there's too much tinkering now, a question for reflection. And that was pretty much that. Of course, one of the things that is affecting post-implementation is regulators and legal risk, right? So that's one of the difficulties to avoid when you get into post-implementation.
Thank you. Daniel?
Yes, we provide a couple of examples of where the time for support versus the staff capacity, we came to the conclusion that it was not sufficient and we were not timely in terms of getting the answers. We discuss about the fact that because we are principle-based and not rule-based, it gave us some challenge in terms of being able to provide detailed guidance. So we need to keep that into consideration. We also express that it's really important to continue the TRG initiatives throughout implementation because knowledge base built within those groups. We should also consider making information more accessible. And we were having in mind IFRIC's TRG works and so on. And about translation, we need to be careful about translation issue creating inconsistency, as mentioned by Jake's group, but we also think we should consider translation as part of the process. And as mentioned earlier, in Canada, because we have to publish in both official languages at the same time, what we discovered many times that folks who were doing the translation in French were challenging those who were writing the standard in English, and that had huge clarity because of question made with the translation process. So maybe translation might be a way to improve the clarity of standards.
Okay, thank you all four of you, and there are very definitely some consistent themes coming through there as I picked up, and I think the big one is, do we do enough now pre-issue, whether it be in terms of the education, considering the downstream effects, and even as Daniel referred to there, actually the translation to ensure that we've got the clarity and the consistency up front. So, and then the second thing, I think it seemed to me that was a very consistent theme was coming around in terms of the Interpretations Committee, either how they deal with things, have they got the right people as new standards come out, as experts to deal with particular standards. And I think it then does come around, well, what is the role of the Interpretations Committee as a new standard is issued? Those, to me, were probably the two key themes that came out of that, encapsulating them. So, Hugh or April, any comments from you?
I think the point on education is a good one, and I think we do need to do, I think we all recognise we need to do more in terms of education about the core elements of our standards at the point of publication. And I think that can be very valuable, and we are working on that, and I think we need to do more. On the point about whether we should spend or invest even more time before publication of our standards, you don't see all that goes on. It is a vast effort by the teams. I mean, we processed over 1,000 comments on the leases draft. Same on the conceptual framework. It is a huge amount of work. And you know, if you didn't know anything about this, the language that's being used would suggest that you know it's kind of a trivial effort. It is not a trivial effort. I think the issue comes if you're going to have a standard which is X hundred pages long, and you want to add in field testing and you want to add in further fatal flaw reviews on a wider basis, this can go on endlessly. And I think you need to, you know, one point I think is that no standard will ever be perfect. And we've got to strike a balance as to when the standards are published. And I think it also comes down to this thing. You know, when you talk about high quality financial reporting, yes, you need the standard to be as good as it can be, but you also need preparers to step up and make judgments. You need auditors to step up and make judgments. You need regulators to step up and make judgments. And it can't be that all these judgments are thrown back to us to somehow figure out what the standard should say differently. And you know, at the end of the day, what is the hallmark of being a professional accountant? It is exercising a judgment.
Having said that, Hugh, and I wholeheartedly agree with you, particularly around that last statement around exercising judgment. However, the fact that it's come out from all four groups, and my challenge to you is not to add more time and more resources, and therefore takes even longer to get something out, just to think, is what we're doing now as effective as it can be to ensure that the standard we are issuing is as clear as it can be? And I think that, to me, is probably clear and in terms of what the implications might be. So nobody specifically said do field testing or do more work. It was more thinking about those things up front. And to me, the challenge is it... is what we're doing as effective as it can be to get the best standard, as you said, as we can do?
I like this idea. I accept it. I accept the challenge of it. I think if you look at the lease accounting project, you can see we're doing it. We published three documents in 2015, two around definition of a lease, which essentially determines whether you're in the model or you're not, and the other one actually walks you through the mechanics of how you apply lessor and lease accounting, principally lease accounting. So I think we've taken on some of this already, but to, I think, the point that Gavin made and Francois made, I think it's a reasonable request, and frankly, if we do things smarter in the standard-setting process earlier, then perhaps we will have more time for this, as demonstrated by Petrina Buchanan and her team, and Henry, who deserve a lot of credit here. So I think it's a reasonable request. I don't have any problem with it.
I was going to make a similar point. I mean, we have been doing it, and not just on leases, actually. These snapshot-type documents, they're out there for insurance, they're done on a conceptual framework as well. So it's not just the fatal flaw process that's going on at this point. And we have tried to be responsive to this feedback.
Rudolph?
Yeah, I just wanted to underscore one of the points that Jake made. In our group, we had a number of representatives from non-English-speaking countries, and the comment went around a number of times how diversity or quality of interpretation or translation, rather, had resulted in some diversity in practice. And I would just say, based on the comments I heard, it really sounds like the official translation process is either broken or needs a significant overhaul. So I just wanted to underscore that.
Further comments around this? Yep, I can't even read who that is or see who it is. Go for it.
Thank you, Joanna. Many people talked about the language translation issue in implementation. I suggest the impact of language translation as a possible research project because the many jurisdictions that do not speak English have a difficulty in implementing IFRS because of the translation itself. Therefore, the identifying the translation issues and improving it would be helpful for more jurisdictions adopting IFRS in global. And another related issue is regionally different interpretation for judgmental terms under IFRS. for example, the terms expressing likelihood, the probable, highly probable, likely, and those things have different meanings in different countries. It caused the diversity in interpretation. So that's another possible research project. Okay, thank you.
Linda.
Okay, I'm going to say these comments, and I mean them constructively, but they may not come out that way, so be warned. That comment back on understanding what it takes to implement and everything, I do think there is some friction there. You're hearing it from four groups, and there is something to take into consideration there. We have to work together to figure out how to do that best, but it's the only way that we're going to have a smooth transition and high quality and a high reputation. So I do encourage you to think, and sometimes I am from the insurance side, and there's a few others here. Sometimes we do think that you're going for speed versus trying to resolve all the issues, because I know sometimes the issues, you think you've closed them and then they come open. It's the nature of the beast. But if we can work together constructively, I think we'll get to a good product.
Thanks, Linda. Stephen?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one thing on translation, because I've been involved, although I have no idea how to translate to Chinese, but we have been helping the ISB in the past translate the Chinese versions, and we've been helping the ministry. One of the points that they've always made back to me is that it's because the standards aren't written in clear, concise, and plain language in the first place. It's not necessarily that the translation is an issue. It's they're having difficulty because, as we say, different words are used in different places. And if we followed a sort of plain English, they have no problem in translating. It's when there are differences and they really struggle to understand the nuances of the English language when it's not used in a very plain, vanilla-type format. So I think that's just worth bearing in mind when we look at the translation issue. It can be a lot made a lot easier if we get the English version in a very, say, concise and plain language, which I think was one of the, you know, our objectives in the first place.
And I think Daniel summed that up nicely when he said with the translations that they have to do before they issue anything, that actually translating it into French makes sure that they understand what the English is and getting that clarity up front. Okay, any other comments on question two or any other, and Hugh, any direct response, further direct response from you?
No, I don't think so. I think we can...
Okay. In which case, if we move to question three, which is the pace and level of change, and I love your picture, Jake, and it actually reminds me that obviously happened in the UK because it happened last week in one of New Zealand's country towns. It was a brand new truck in New Zealand, lorry driver, who ended up on a bridge that was only supposed to take 4 tons, and he was a 20-ton truck, and the road was shut for a very long time. Anyway, carry on.
Thank you. Yes, again, a picture that shows that at this stage, my ability to get the team to answer the actual question failed about as spectacularly as this lorry driver's sat nav. Having said that, pace and level of change. Broadly, there was satisfaction with the structure that the ISB have now, right now, so the research standards, et cetera, et cetera. But there was definitely frustration with a slow pace of change. And we were left with a difficult question, which was, will the speed of change of business models impact on the relevance of IFRS if that pace of change continues at that rate? If you could move to the next slide. Thank you, Ida. So we thought some sensible actions that the ISB could undertake would be to understand where the bottlenecks are. Is that clear? Do we know which of those can be fixed? There's probably a need, and this goes back to the comment I made earlier, to try and get in front of the curve. What is changing in the economy? What is changing in industry? How is financial reporting likely to need to change in the future to reflect that? And there was a desire to try and experiment with some models. So Patrick raised the possibility of maybe disclosures first, followed by recognition and measurement later, really trying to, as soon as a business model changes, can we put out something, or can the ISB put out something that says these are the disclosures that investors need to have right now just to understand how you're accounting for it and the impact on your financial statements, and then maybe taking some longer time and effort over, does that mean anything for the recognition and measurement models in due course? So there's an immediate patch that you can put over. Secondly, another comment raised was maybe we need to accept that the standard isn't always going to fix all of the problems, which is slightly different, I think, to the point Linda was making just now. And at what stage can you bring in this question again on what is the return on the investment going to be if I continue to try and fix all of the problems? Can I draw a line at some point in time and say that fixes 80% of the problems, that's going to do a lot of benefit. For the rest, here are some disclosures maybe, and maybe we seek to address those at a later stage if they become more prevalent. And with any experimentation, we're going to have to accept that there will be some failure. And I say we in that last bullet because I think that's everybody around this table, that's stakeholders, regulators, auditors, everyone. If we experiment more, then there is going to be more failure. And I mean not of businesses, I mean of the process. I hope.
Thank you, Jake. Rene?
John, well, sweet. We had a long discussion. But it was very difficult to put something down that I can talk to. because I think there was... You know, and hopefully I'm correct on that assessment. Satisfaction with the pace and level of change, as a whole, but maybe on certain aspects, on one or two topics, where it was too slow. But the comment was also made that, you know, you cannot sacrifice quality. And so one will have to understand it. So, you know, certainly, team, I didn't pick up that that we had a major problem or that we would want to come up with some recommendation. But it was sort of a reserved yes and a reserved no. A suggestion was made that perhaps the ISB should do an assessment, get some feedback, not just from this group, but send out something to assess their pace and how they perceive how they are perceived by stakeholders.
Ernesto.
Okay, here again we had some focus on initial scope analysis. Maybe that could help to sort out the time frame. Another comment was that probably standards were getting too large. I mean, too much detail and complexity. Even audit committee members around the world are struggling to understand them. Some standards need to be long and detailed, but maybe not all of them. And then, of course, as René, I mean, basically the group was saying, why not do a post-mortem analysis on time slippage? I mean, what's making them so long? And then other comments, I mean, could we do less outreach? I mean, the answer was very quick, no. I mean, we have to protect the brand, and having more countries puts pressure on timing, but it's part of the essence of the board, right? So that's it.
Okay, and finally, Daniel.
In terms of the speed, we are of the opinion that generally it's okay, because we recognize that we need the buy-in, and also considering the number of countries involved and cultural difference, consultation and acceptance takes time. We are definitely of the opinion that high quality is way more important than speed, and more philosophically, accounting question not a matter of life and death. So having said that, it's generally okay, but we really need to make a distinction between the regular process and the ability to deal with urgent situations, and like the financial crisis. And having said that, how we define urgent situation. So I think that we need to think about that. We also think that we need to set deadlines for project milestones to complete in order, for example, let's define the time for to complete the initial research on goodwill, for example, and then what is the time for the next steps and so on in order to try to reduce the time of the process. And on that, we can learn from past experience that we had with other major standard initiatives. And we recognize that getting something which is solid in theory sometimes may lead us to forget that we need some time to go to practical solutions and accept that.
Okay. I have two observations to make from these four, which are all flippant and probably shows to me that it's getting to, getting to the end of day two. And the first one was, you guys were obviously getting to the end of your energy levels for this one because it was generally okay. And then I thought, well, actually, we can all go home because actually accounting is not a matter of life and death. So what are we doing here? Sorry, as I say, flippant comments that I shouldn't say that. However, it seems that, again, what I would say, there is nothing revolutionary here. However, as it also, I will say one of the things, and I think it was Surya who said at the investor breakfast meeting this morning, you know, it's crises that cause things to need to change. So actually the feedback that you're getting from these groups, I think, forget the tiredness comment, is actually saying it ain't broken. Yes, there are some tweaks, which I think everyone actually agreed right up front before we even put this out, that you know, there are some tweaks. However, it ain't broken. So that's what I take out of this. There are some things that we can do to improve, and in particular what Jake is talking about in terms of getting in front of the game, understanding you know, what the environment is, the environment scan, to make sure that, that we're there so that we're not going like his road sign all over the place, although inevitably there will be a bit of that. So that's my summing up for that one. So, Hugh, any comments from you on that, or April?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a possibly flippant comment myself. This is about the seventh or eighth forum that I've been in when this question was discussed, and I think pretty much in each one there's been a rather lackluster, yes, it's just about right, or on the basis that it's not quite wrong. And I had something actually, and people quite often qualify that by saying it depends very much on the project. Some we think are too much, some we think are too little. But I had a very insightful comment from someone today, which I should have realized myself and I didn't. And that's, I think they thought that the reason that people have problems answering this question other than so-so is that they've got nothing to benchmark us against. We're really quite a unique organization. There's no one you can look to say they're doing it faster, they're doing it in more detail, what have you. And I thought that was quite a useful comment. The FASB obviously is a big standard setter, but they're working in a completely different environment. So I thought that was a useful comment today.
And still, we are often faster.
Hugh?
The reason standard, or the big reason standards take a long time, is the outreach. And the reason we have lots of outreach is, you know, we're a private sector entity telling most of the world what to do. It's kind of an unusual thing. And that's why we have extensive due process. And obviously the fact that we now have 116 countries using IFRS, there's an awful lot of people to talk to. It takes time.
Yeah. And, I made a bit of a... We can benchmark ourselves a little bit with the FASB, which in itself has a simpler field in which it works because it's US only. Still, if you look, for example, at financial instruments, we were able to finish that quicker. Well, perhaps they come up with a better product, so higher quality and take a little bit more time. So I'm not saying that it's necessarily better. But we are able to work a little bit quicker these days. What you have also, what you cannot really perceive from the outside is that the work, the board is working a little bit differently from the past. In the past, the staff worked extremely autonomously, brought their papers to the board with some involvement of board advisors, but not very much. And then often the board had a good weekend reading the papers, and papers were blown out of the water, and staff could go back to zero. And that has changed. There is much more direct involvement of the board advisors, so the board itself takes much more responsibility for the development of the standards, and that means that there are. Although we still have surprising results and nothing is pre-cooked in terms of decision-making in the board, but there is a bit more solid ground for the staff in bringing papers to the board, and it happens less often that we say, well, now here you're really following a course that we cannot continue. And I think, you know, that has slowly changed in the last couple of years. And I think that brings also a much more, in the end, it brings much more speed and stability to the decision-making process. The idea of having sort of a fire brigade spotting issues around the world and then, you know, come up with short-term fixes like disclosures first and let's worry about the standard itself later, I'm not so sure if... would be very enthusiastic about that, because even disclosures require a lot of cool thinking. And I'm not so sure to begin with disclosures and then wait with the standard itself, if that would be a good procedure. Also, I would hope that since our standards are principle-based, that they do not become completely out of date very quickly, that is a gradual process. Sometimes, you know, the market will completely outsmart you. Let's look at the Enron scandal, and then you have to make quick fixes to prevent structuring around the standard. That may be possible, that, you know, you really have to take very quick action because of unexpected loopholes in the standard. Generally speaking, I think the process of standard getting outdated is much more gradual and does not necessitate extremely urgent action. Yes.
I just wanted to say there was one thing that concerned me slightly in one of the comments, and I may have misheard it, and that was the suggestion that we have a deadline for project milestones, for example, for goodwill. And I appreciate the frustration that people have about the timing of things, but I just was thinking of some comments people have raised about the quality of decisions taken, and I would hope that having sort of milestone deadlines wouldn't affect the quality of the board's decision making or deliberations.
Okay, thanks, April. David, do you want to say something?
Yeah, just on the point that Jake raised about new models, including possibility of disclosures first, recognition, measurement afterwards. It's not a new model, it's been done before. And so sometimes, although we should be forward-looking, it helps to look back in history, because I can give you some specific examples from the UK experience where it had a standard on disclosure of financial instruments before it had one on recognition and measurement. Effectively, it waited for the international board to produce its standard. And on FRS 17, to do with pensions, it had a long implementation period, starting with disclosures first before the recognition of the gains and losses and actuarial liabilities on the balance sheet to warm people up. So there's a couple of precedents there of tactics to use that gets over a lot of opposition at times.
Both cases, it worked well.
It depends who you talk to, but yeah.
In the case of financial instruments, it worked very well.
Yeah, and in the case of pensions, I mean, eventually UK PLC grumbled, but they went along with it because they'd had a long time to get used to the idea.
And in some ways, that does come back to the comments we were making earlier about it's giving the information, people having the information. It's not necessarily whether leases are on or off balance sheet, or whatever it may be. Okay, any further comments on that last item around the speed? Peter.
This is a comment that sort of I've picked up from a number of the groups, but also, frankly, over the course of the whole of the last day and a half. And it's a very basic point, which we've partly discussed, but we have two ends of a spectrum when we have an accounting standard. If you have it purely principles, then it should be a very short, sharp explanation of what the principle is. But that would require an enormous amount of judgment from the accountants, preparers, the auditors, and so on and so forth. And therefore, also judgment, frankly, from the lawyers and everybody else taking part. Normally, when you set something in principles, you are asked for guidance because people need to know a little bit more about how to implement it. And the more guidance you ask, the more you move towards rules. Because if you have enough guidance, you'll have an extremely long document, and you basically have a rules document. And then, of course, the interpretation is a bit different, but it involves considerably less judgment. So the question we could probably keep testing, and I don't know the right forum for it, but at what point on that scale for a principles-based regulator is the appropriate place to be, bearing in mind the audience we have, but also our own resources? And a number of the comments over the last day or so have been, well, we've probably gone a bit too far. It's too much detail, too much information. Maybe we can try and keep things a bit shorter, a bit more concise, but it would require people around the world to accept that judgment comes into play.
I think that I certainly think that's a very, very valid comment. It has kept coming up, and I think it is something, quite frankly, that the board are forever grappling with, because the submissions that come in, you know, it's not just around this table, are at one end saying keep it to principles, and at the other end saying, but we need to know how to do this, so we want to go to the rule end. And but Peter, maybe it is that the board or the foundation needs to put a stake in the ground, a true stake in the ground, to say this is as far as we are going to go as to where that balance is, and maybe it would help to clarify. I mean, I'm just putting that out there as to actually this is what we're going to do, and you can use your judgment, as we talked about earlier, and it's part of that education and behaviour change that you talked about before around the materiality. And actually just put the stake in the ground, because I'm absolutely convinced, like you, Peter, that an awful lot of the noise is because you have got people on either extreme as to what they want and what they're, and they're never going to stop. It's like our German negative commentators. They're always going to be there and not change, you know, to think about that. And maybe it is something that this council can potentially in the future help think about as to how you go about, if we do think it's appropriate to put that stake in the ground and say, well, this is where it is. Any other comments on any of this, Paul?
Thanks, Joanna. Just to clarify on the milestone point, and this was in the context of, as you've obviously got a big focus on the research projects bucket now, and as items come into that research funnel, to have an initial, whether it's a year, 6 months, to say we're going to spend this time, and then decide at that point whether it's worth carrying on, or it might be, well, we need another 2 years, but to try and put something around it so that that research bucket doesn't just become full of things that sit there for, you know, 7-8 years and don't get the attention. So it was more putting a bit of a discipline on, not to say there's not discipline now, but a bit of a marker to say, here's what we're going to spend, here's how much time we're going to spend to work out if it's worth going to the next step. And at the end of that, you might say, well, we still need another year, or you might say, you know what, we can spend another 10 years on this and we're not going to get there. So I think that was the perspective, putting more of a sort of project milestone in, not necessarily to say you have to finish it in a year and neglect quality, for example. It was just to get those markers, because otherwise that research bucket is just going to fill up and fill up, and at each agenda consultation you'll be having a decision, well, which ones do we take out or leave in.
Thanks for that clarification, Paul. Any other comments on either this question or anything else that has come out of that you've had a reflection on, that you've got a burning desire to share with either the group or and or the team here? Steve.
Thank you, Joanna. Today I have two different issues regarding translation. The first was the language translation we talked a little bit earlier. The second issue is the foreign currency translation. When ISB issued the discussion paper on the conceptual framework, the ISB determined that the foreign currency issues would be best dealt with when the relevant standard is revised. So now the ISB is proposing dropping the foreign currency translation issue from the research agenda. It is against its own decision several months ago. So I want you to reconsider about the foreign currency translation issue.
Peter, do you want to respond?
I think the decision in the conceptual framework project was not so much that we ought to look at foreign exchange and the best place to look at it would be in a standards level project in the short term. It was that there's no particular advantage in looking at it in the conceptual framework project because there's no real interaction with other issues. And so the time to look at it would be if and when we look at it at the standards level. That was not to say that we had a plan to look at it at the standards level in the short term.
So what I'm saying is, why don't you keep it as a research agenda rather than the standard agenda.
Well, people can comment on this during the agenda consultation. It's visible.
It's mentioned.
Yeah.
Hitotaki.
Thanks. Just one comment that, goodwill issues, actually. Well, because pre-meeting survey, goodwill is the first priority. So please keep in mind this is a very, very big issue. So please seriously think about that, please. That's it.
Noted?
Yeah, noted.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Any other general comments? I'm going to throw it back to Hugh and then actually to Hans in terms of any comments around, you know, if you like, from this session. Well, Hugh or Hans? Or both?
What impressed me most from this discussion is that in terms of the agenda consultation, the proof will be in the pudding, and I think it will be. I think it's almost impossible to come up with an objective set of criteria and then tick the boxes, and then the result falls out. I think all the preferences are very specific and depend on a lot of criteria, which are perhaps not always so objective. So I think we will probably gain most insight from the question. This is what we have on the research agenda. Please make your preferences very clear. Similar exercise to what our American friends have done with their constituents, because then I think it will become hopefully a little bit clearer what the preferences of our constituents are. And then we still have to look at it and weigh it and weigh the argument. It's not just a matter of adding up the numbers, but we also want to hear the arguments behind it. And then we can weigh everything.
Can I just say something on that? Because when we were devising the request reviews, we were aware of the process that the FASB go through where they target people and ask them to grade their responses. And we didn't go down that approach because that is a very different approach from ours in many respects. It's not transparent. It's done in private. The FASB select the people who they're going to ask the questions of, and they send them out to a group of people, and then those group of people sort of self-select whether they're going to come back and whether they're going to score. So although I agree that we do need to have more sort of levels of granularity in the information, the process itself, we did look at that, and we thought we wouldn't go down that route at the time.
I think there's a slight disagreement at that end of the table.
Sure. Just to clarify, the participants, as we talked through, were the advisory group members. We had really good participation. Not all participated, but over 80% of those that are on the advisory groups, that information is available on the website. We also plan to provide a final compilation of the full results that are broken down by stakeholder type. We don't necessarily attribute a comment directly to a particular person, so it's slightly different than the comment letter process. But as I mentioned yesterday, the FASB is going to go through a discussion paper process where they're also going to provide an opportunity for broader comment, and certainly that will be an open process as well.
I stand corrected.
And to a certain extent, April, arguably what you are now doing, and Hans is suggesting, is actually almost doing it the other way around, if you like, and maybe it is, you know, refining, and it's something to think about as we go forward. As you say, you don't have a full agenda consultation. It's just thinking, well, what do we prioritise? And actually, everyone has a different view.
But if I understand FASAC correctly, the end product will be more or less the same for both boards, namely a full consultation of proposals. So that's good to hear, except you did a little bit of pre-washing and give some indications from your committee members.
I think that's very fair. I think the steps are very much similar. It's just the ordering and the framing is slightly different.